Jack Jones, a butcher of Wilmington High Street, Wilmington on Sea.
I know I am.
You are accused of extreme silliness and being the least consistent character in the popular British sitcom Dad's Army. How do you plead?
Permission to postulate, not guilty, Your Worship. I am very consistent. Constantly indeed, sir.
We will examine the evidence presented and members of the jury, that is, the esteemed listeners of the popular online show, The Dad's Army Podcast, will decide your fate.
Oh, yes, sir. A very good choice of jury, sir. Very good indeed. And there's a sausage in it for every member of a jury who votes not guilty.
I see. And what do you intend to do for those members who vote guilty?
They don't like it up, sir. They don't like it up.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think we're on the run.
Hello and welcome to episode 59 of the Dad's Army Podcast. James and I are back. And wow, it's the moment a lot of you have been waiting for quite a long time, which is entirely our fault for being far too busy to record it. But this is the trial of Lance Corporal Jones.
Indeed. Hello, everybody. I'm particularly looking forward to talking about Jones. It's been some time since we come up with the idea of this particular episode. I just wanted to give Jones a fair hearing. I mean, I can sit there and talk about pretty much any character of Dad's Army off the top of my head for a long period of time, but I wanted to do a little bit of planning on this one, and this is basically to address a long vendetta that you, the listeners, seem to perceive me as having against Jones. So I thought I ought to explain my reasons. Oliver, of course, is here to present the case for the defence.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I remember hearing the first podcast I ever heard. It was at least 2 years ago, if not more, and I remember people emailing even back then to say, come on, James, give Jonesy a break. So that's what I'm here to do today. I've watched a bit of Clive Dunn recently to pick out some of my personal favourite moments where I think he's indeed a very rounded character. And we're going to be hearing some of your thoughts as well, and also some thoughts on the defence from a couple of Dad's Army veterans later on in the episode, so stay tuned for that. But first of all, James, I mean, where do you want to start with your attack?
Well, I don't want it to be seen as an attack, and right at the top of the show, I'll say something that those listening to this will probably forget by the end of it, but I want to start off by saying I like all Dad's Army characters. I have always liked all Dad's Army characters. And that includes Jones. And there are some episodes where I think he's got some absolutely fantastic scenes. And I'm certain that you're going to bring some of those up, Oliver. But my major criticism of Jones is, compared to the other characters, he is not as well-rounded and he's not as well thought out and he's not as well written. I mean, there are all manner of places that I could start proving that point or trying to demonstrate that point. But the first example I'm going to give is the extremes that his character seems to demonstrate. And I think he shows polar opposite traits far more than other characters. So, for example, you can always expect Fraser to be pessimistic. You can expect him to be a gossip, but deep down he's got a reasonably good heart. And you can buy that character as a genuine representation of someone who can be a little bit pessimistic and can be a little bit optimistic, but ultimately is supportive of what the platoon is trying to do. Whereas you have Jones. This is an old campaigner. He is the most experienced warhorse, if you like, that the platoon has. He's seen lots of battles, apparently. He's been face-to-face with the enemy, hand-to-hand fighting. Indeed, they don't like Illapham, and his obsession with bayonets is testament to the fact that he's got a violent past, you know? He's a soldier through and through. And yet, you put him in a situation that requires him to be agile in terms of the way he thinks and reasons in terms of his actions, and you get very, very unpredictable results or unexpected results. So I'm going to give two examples. The first of which is the Royal Train, where you have Jones on the back of the tender. Yeah, I think that's what they call those big trailer things that steam trains used to pull along. And also the scene on top of the roof in Uninvited Guests, which is basically the same scene. It's Corporal Jones following Mannering into a precarious circumstance without any plan, any thoughts, and ends up saying, "You saved my life, Captain Mannerin." So he ends up creating far more problems than he ever solves.
It's very slippery, isn't it, sir?
Yes.
Someone ought to tell him, you know. It's not very nice for people walking along here, and it's all slippery. Oh, sir, you saved my life, sir. I'll never forget that, sir. Thank you, sir.
In defence, in the Deadly Attachment, probably one of his greatest moments, and certainly one of the best rounds of applause the series ever saw, is when he stops the Germans from getting the machine gun and shoots it up the roof. And it's a tremendous round of applause and quick thinking from Jones, which, even though he's a little bit too in your face of getting the "I did well, didn't I, sir?" Amazing, agile, quick of a moment thinking, you know, on Corporal Jones's part, and stopped the platoon from getting ransacked.
Get back! You're not getting this! Get back!
Obviously, that was a great comedy element, saying, "You saved my life again, Captain Mannering." But what bravery, what sheer bravery from Corporal Jones to be the first out. What I was thinking about Jones, I watched the very first episode of the series last night, and there were a few things that stuck out for me about Corporal Jones. One, he is the first member of the platoon to get a laugh in the entire series. On the opening montage, wartime montage, he switches the sign around and ends up sending a motorbike into the river. And he is the first member of the platoon to get the first laugh. In terms of getting a well-rounded character, all the elements of Jonesy that we come to love, other than Don't Panic, which doesn't really feature in the first few episodes, permission to speak, sir, that's there. The late stamping of the feet in the lineup, that's there. Volunteering, he volunteers. Go, let me be the tank, sir. Let me be the tank, sir. It's all there right from the word go. So they obviously had a very clear... They don't like it up him. That's there. The bayonet, the cold steel. All these elements of Jonesy that we know and love are pretty much there right from the word go. And in terms of, I think, in that first episode, I think he and probably Walker are the characters that, from the start to the finish, are the most similar to how they start. I think everyone goes through a reasonable amount of... that the characters were either developed or improved as the series went on. I think these guys, Jones and Walker, were pretty well-rounded and well thought through.
I think it's interesting you choose the first episode, and I think, in all fairness, you're on safe territory there, that's why. And I think you could probably say a lot of what you're saying in terms of how the characters are portrayed using any episode from the first series as an example. And the reason being is because all of those characters are much more rounded and much more developed within the first series. And if I have to give examples of episodes that I really enjoy Jones in, I'm always going to go back to those first couple of series, because Jones wasn't an idiot. He was never portrayed as an idiot.
Yeah.
He was portrayed as an experienced soldier, someone who was fiercely loyal, and you touched on that, and very, very brave. Whereas that bravery continued into later series, it was tinged with silliness. So in other words, yeah, he would walk out on top of towers. He had a tendency to go up the top of large buildings. You look at Battle of the Giants,
yeah,
and also Time on My Hands,
yeah,
and you got two examples of Jones dangling or being stuck up somewhere he really shouldn't be, and his bravery is not in question, but neither is his stupidity.
Yeah. But what cannot be questioned at all is the sheer brilliance of Clive Dunn's stunt work and his ability to stretch or do the splits.
I'm not sure stunt work really happens. I mean, the Battle of the Giants, you're looking at CSO there, is about 3 foot off the ground.
In fairness, he's holding on to that pole, and you know, I mean, I personally would not be able to do what he did. And the episode in the last series where the bomb is on the phone wires.
Number engaged,
yeah. I mean, he does all kinds of crazy stuff there, and he's dangling. You know, I mean, I think that whilst the character, fair enough, did become more silly, it put Jones, and therefore Clive Dunn, in positions to be able to improve the slapstick element of the show. And I know you're not a massive fan of slapstick, but if you were to take Jones out of Dad's Army as a character, I think you'd have a lot less physical comedy in the show.
I think it would be better, and the reason being, and I'm not advocating Jones would make Dad's Army better by his absence. I'm talking about physical comedy, and the best physical comedy for me, without a shadow of a doubt, within Dad's Army is between Arthur Lowe and Ian Lavender. Jones or Clive Dunn is very obvious humour, and I think the writers didn't particularly know what to do with Jones later on within the series, because they constantly returned to the same kind of visual gags with Jones, which is, I mean, you mentioned earlier the constant desire to use a bayonet. Yeah. In almost any situation, they try to use the comic effect. Whereas if you look at the character of Jones in the first two series, they go far beyond just a physical comedy. They actually use Jones in a very early episode to create a very moving and poignant moment. So, and we talked about this just before we started recording, and indeed we talked about it on the last podcast actually with Paul Carpenter, and that's using the character of Jones to show how disappointed the platoon were that they didn't have any arms of any substance.
Oh, yeah,
you know, but that was unthinkable to pick that scene up and put it in series 7 or 8, because Jones by then had become a complete buffoon, and the only kind of serious scenes that he could really hold his weight in were ones where he was in the character's comfort zone, so in his butcher's shop. So you look at episodes like 2 1/2 Feathers, where you've got a scene which has just got Clive Dunn in it, where he opens the letters and you hear his voice as thoughts.
Why did you leave your friend in the desert to die? There's no room in Warmington-on-Sea for a coward. A coward like you is not even worth a whole white feather, so I'm sending you a half a one.
And all of a sudden you've got a serious character again there. And that's why that episode is so good, because it's so unusual.
Yeah.
Whereas other episodes, there are countless episodes where you've got Jones saying the same words over and over again when they're not particularly funny. I mean, Asleep in the Deep, he wants to give Captain Menowin a bunk up and a bunk down all the time. The Test, he acts like a deranged gorilla, I think I've described him as, behind the wicket. For me, not funny, and very, very cheap humour.
But let's not forget that he was the staples of Jones, the lineup, the don't panic, they don't like it up, and he's always got the laughs. You know, you watch him back and the audience are crying with laughter. I mean, what also the thing about Jonesy is, I think he's, for the kids, it was a family show for the kids, he's the funniest character. A lot of the subtle humour between Arthur and John Lemez would have been lost on the youngsters. As a child, personally, for me, my first remembrance of Dad's Army is Jonesy on the clock tower in Time on My Hands. That's that's my earliest memory of Dad's Army, because it's like, oh, it's an old man, you know, potentially going to fall to his death, but doing funny things and getting a sword up his bottom, you know. It's, and you're laughing, you see.
I'm laughing at your description.
All right,
that's why.
Yeah.
I think you make two points there, one of which I agree with you completely and wholeheartedly, and that's the latter of the points. I think Jones is definitely the kid's way into the series. He's the access point, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think he probably performs that role admirably, really, really well. I'm not a kid. Yeah. I've never been a kid in terms of when I've really appreciated Dad's Army. So that may be a reason as to why I don't enjoy the way that Jones was used. But your first point, in as much as he always got a laugh, I can't agree with. And the reason being is because that studio audience laughed at absolutely anything, even at things that weren't deliberately funny. If you watch Branded, now there are some pretty nasty scenes there between Menorin and Godfrey. And because the audience, they don't know what's coming, they think it's going to be a funny laugh, and all of a sudden he really lays into Godfrey, and they laugh.
Yeah.
In an inappropriate way, I feel. And whether or not it would be edited out today or not, I'm not sure. But that laughter track doesn't seem to be... Well, it's not a laughter track, but the laughter doesn't appear to be appropriate there.
No.
So just because the audience laugh at Clive Dunn falling over something, or saying gurgle, gurgle several times in Don't Forget the Diver, I don't think it's an indication of whether the character's being well written.
No.
But there are some examples, and I'm not going to start picking up your mantle here, but there are some scenes, particularly after James Beck died, that Jones and Clive Dunn absolutely twinkle. They're brilliant. Yeah. And that usually is with Ian Lavender.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, very much so. Totally. We've discussed this before. That sort of paternal relationship came into its own there. Clive Dunn's a very good actor, you know, and he really gets to show it in most scenes. And of course, never too old, you know, when his reaction to Mrs. Fox saying, you know, yes, you're married to him, you've got to find moving, you know, he genuinely, absolutely thrilled. He's going to get married, and his little bits of jealousy, like, you know, why would he have been in the bathroom with you, you know?
Can't you get out of the bath on your own?
Yeah,
good moments there. Good moments there. But you're right. But what you have to do, and both of us have done it, is look to the episodes that are out of the ordinary for Jones in order to say he was good in that. Mm. Because when he's in a run of the mill episode, he doesn't stand out. Mm. We're talking about the very final episode of the run ever.
Yes.
It was going to be laced with poignancy, and it was focused around the character of Jones. Mm. Very easy to cling on to that in the same way that you want to, you know, you cling on to My Brother and I for Arthur Lowe.
Yes.
Out of his comfort zone, great acting, really good stuff. But can you think of an episode where Jones doesn't feature heavily, where he does something that's really very funny? Because I can think of lots with Fraser, for example, or indeed Pike, who probably have about five lines in the episode, and yet those five lines are brilliant. And the reason being is because the character has been developed and portrayed in such a clever way, but they just can't seem to do it with Jones.
Oh, no, I disagree. I think Mum's Army, which is not a Jones-led episode, Mrs. Fox is... she goes, I put my age on the bottom, and he sort of gives a little glance down to her backside. I mean, that's funny, and it's not a Jones episode. It's probably one where he features rather little. There's an episode, I always think of the line, you will get this up you and you will not like it. I can't remember what episode. That might even be Deadly Attachment.
Actually. No, it's not. That one, oh goodness, I don't know how I get that so quickly. That is Uninvited Guests also.
Right.
Where the warden has obtained permission from the vicar to use the office, and Mannerin's having none of it.
Yeah.
And,
he says, get him out of here, Jones.
That's right. And also, that episode, once again, that demonstrates both points that both you and I are making, because clearly I've already mentioned the ridiculous parts of it on top of the roof at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, he proves your point in terms of being incredibly loyal, because he, without a shadow of a doubt, is going to remove Hodges.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Jones is the
stop him.
No, and absolutely right. And Jones is the character that the writers use to frighten Hodges. He's not frightened of Mannerin.
No.
He's frightened of Jones.
Yeah.
If you don't move out of here, you'll get this right up you and you will not like it.
Now, look here, Gandhi.
What?
Look, you haven't heard the last of this. I'm telling you, you haven't heard the last of it. Get off.
Well done, Jones.
I don't like the old cold steel, sir. Most of them cannot come.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I always liked his banter with Eddie Sinclair. You know, you're a troublemaker. You are. I love their troublemaker banter because it's so like random. No one else has that banter with the Verger. I'll tell you another very good Jones moment is when he's in the grave and he's throwing the mud out.
I can't argue with that. That absolutely creases me up every time I see it. That's either, I think that's the Miser's Hoard.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It's either that or No Spring for Fraser.
Spring for Fraser. Oh, right, that's okay. It. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, that is brilliant. And
you can't see Clive Dunn at all there, though.
No, but it's
the character is there.
The character's there. And he's been digging for victory, you know. It's that's a great Jonesy moment.
It is. Let's talk a little bit about some of the interaction between Jones and some of the other characters, in particular Mannerin, because he has a very on-off relationship with Mannerin. Sometimes Mannerin is singing Jones' praises. Other times he's trying to get rid of him, and is the only character that he swears at in the entire run.
Yeah.
And that's in Sergeant Save My Boy, and where he's trying to find a mine, and Jones comes out with an incredibly random line, something about, oh, has he got trouble at home or something, and that I think is quite easy to write again because Jones is an irritating character, and he was written in that episode as an irritating character, and he irritates Mannering.
Yeah.
So that's certainly one example where he's got a problem with Mannering there. And you look at the whole theme of put that light out, they're trying to find something for Jones to do to keep him out of the way, so they put him up the top of a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And in the desperate drive of Lance Corporal Jones, not only does he take the map reference down in the wrong way, Mannering decides to keep him away from all of the live ammunition by giving him a role as car park attendant or something, which goes horrifically wrong. And that's because Mannering knows he's a liability.
Yeah.
So is it purely because Jones is a butcher and can provide the Mannering and the Wilson with meats, while he retains that position of responsibility? But that indeed casts a shadow on Mannering's integrity almost. Or is it just because Jones is such a fish out of water in a senior position that it makes it funny?
I think you're absolutely right. He was used, you know, it was the gag that Mannering, you're in the realms of fantasy. And I think there's one episode where Jonesy really sort of spits his dummy out, saying, oh, you know, I'm in the realms of fantasy again. You know, you can't make him happy, can you? And it's like, Jones, you know?
I think that happens a couple of times, And at one point, I think in Don't Forget the Diver, he says to Fraser, he's playing with fire, I control his meat. So it's almost an acknowledgement he's an NCO because he has access to steak.
Oh, that's right. They had that gag in the very first episode. He said, can I keep my stripe? And then he says, oh, I'll just take the steak back. And
So it's a slight inconsistency in the way Mannering's written there, because normally he's portrayed as a very, very righteous, do the right thing, patriotic character. But it's interesting that it's Jones that corrupts him, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
But I think Walker does as well, to be fair.
Yeah,
he tempts him with a lot of black market stuff. I think Mannering also articulates it in one of the best possible ways in Mum's Army, where I think he uses the expression, I suppose sometime he's going to have to go.
Yes.
And again, that's actually addressed full on in the early episodes, and I forget the name of the episode, which is unusual for me, but it was either in the first or second series where Jones is put through a assault course, by Major Regan. And I think that showing up of Corporal Jones?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. But that's because he's portrayed as a very old character in the first couple of series, and of course then progressively gets younger.
Yeah.
But, you know, Major Regan, despite being a thoroughly dislikable character in all of the episodes that he appears in my view, gets it absolutely spot on with Jones. He should have gone a while ago,
No, but I always loved him when we know our onions. When he thinks I'm a German officer, so he just strangles Fulton Mackay, tries to maim him, Even in the Dad's Army film where they wake up in the morning outside the tents and he just strangles Mannering, What are you doing? I mean, little touches like that, you couldn't get away with a different character.
No, and there's a reason for it. I mean, do you personally find that funny?
I think it's great. Just, I think Jones randomly waking up and thinking Mannering is... what he must have been dreaming about, I don't know. But I think that's a great bit of it's what Clive done there. I mean, then again, Clive, he ends up in a concentration camp in an episode in the last series.
Face on the poster. Not the last series,
It towards the end of the run. I mean, that's a pretty serious, you've got a feel for him there. You know, he walks in and he needs, what's happened? What happens there? He needs help, doesn't he?
No, there was a mix up, wasn't there, on the printer.
That's right.
Where his face is printed as wanted. That's it, the Peter Butterworth scene. Yeah. Meddling Monk, for all of you Doctor Who fans out there. Had to get one reference.
Yeah, and it was
least.
James, not me.
This time. But yeah, that's I think, shows how useless Jones is, I'm afraid, because you put him in a difficult situation. That's the closest Jones gets to being interrogated by the enemy.
All right,
yes, it's all a mix-up, but he's terrible when he's being interrogated by that Polish officer.
Yeah.
He's unconvincing. He doesn't come across as brave. He loses all of his bravado, and I know the script.
They all do.
They do at the end.
They all get put in there.
Well, I don't know whether they lose. Yes, but Mannering is still very forthright and assertive throughout. His, yes, he ends up in the same position as Jones, and that's all part of the joke, I suppose. But the character of Jones, again, if you hadn't seen that episode and you say, oh, yes, Jones is going to get interrogated, I would have expected him to hold his own, you know, because he does so when he's arguing with the others in the platoon sometimes. And I just don't think it's as consistent as you would expect.
It must be difficult, though, over 80 episodes to keep some and you know, I suppose if we were to closely examine the continuity in the show, there'd be massive holes.
Of course, and for the I'm glad you're having to resort to that rather flimsy argument, Oliver. So, but no, I think you're right. I mean, Dad's Army was never written to be examined in this way. We're doing it because it's fun.
Absolutely.
And there was a wonderful piece of feedback that we received from a chap called Kevin, based in Ireland. And one of the points that he makes is that it very much depends on your tastes in comedy and also your interpretation of Jones. And I think that is completely correct. Some people find what Jones does funny and some people don't. And I think Jones is probably the most divisive character within the series. But you've received some fairly lengthy messages concerning the virtues of our favourite Lance Corporal, have you not?
I have indeed, yes. I mean, coming up, we've got, as I said earlier, a couple of Dad's Army veterans to talk you through their own personal thoughts about Corporal Jones. But before we get into that, let's hear some of your feedback. First of all, I've got Trevor Lynn. Hi, Trevor. Who would think, ladies and gentlemen of a jury, that this fine, venerable old campaigner, local shopkeeper, decorated veteran, home guard volunteer, and upstanding member of a local community who selflessly tends to the needs of so many of the ladies of Warmington would find himself in the dock, accused of nothing less than cheap laughs, padding, rambling monologues, and just being plain annoying? I feel I must come to Jones's defence. If we take the accusation of Jones's lack of credibility, namely that a veteran campaigner, a man who has been around, makes the mistakes of an 8-year-old child, I think this is easily explained. If we are to believe Jones is veteran of the Battle of Omdurman, and served under General Kitchener in the Sudan before being invalided out during World War I because of the old minces, then he has a military career spanning at least 30 years and 2 major wars. Why is it then that through all this time, Jones has only managed to be promoted to Lance Corporal? Surely this must give an indication that Jones, for all his fanatical enthusiasm and bravery, is far from the sharpest tool in the box.
Well, quite frankly, he's a bit mad, isn't he? That's the reason why. The only reason he's got his Lance Corporal
is probably because he was offering General Kitchener some sausages as well.
Well, he may well have been, and certainly was in a position to offer manor in bribes. So yeah, there you are. Well, I thought he was supposed to be on your side, this Trevor guy.
Well, let's see what Trevor says. when combined with his encroaching senility, I think his mistakes do not overtly stretch credibility. As to his annoying tendencies, I think this is partly the dramatic intention of the character. Jones constantly irritates Mannering, especially at times of stress, and undermines his attempts to make the platoon run like a well-oiled machine. As such, he provides a dramatic tension in the script by provoking Mannering. When he rambles and digresses, it is normally cut short by Mannering. Get to the point, Jones. I think you're into the realms of fantasy, etc. I personally find this aspect of a Jones-Mannering relationship reminiscent of Laurel and Hardy, with Stan's ineptitude provoking Ollie's long-suffering look to camera or snappy retort. Ultimately, I think Jones and his antics are a matter of taste. Some like him, some don't. Like Marmite. That's not what Trev said, that's me. But I think his character is credible and well-defined as any of the others, and his brand of bumbling, tenacious bravery sums up the many popular image of the Home Guard. I'd also ask this question of those who dislike Jones. Namely, can you imagine Dad's Army without him? To me, Clive Dunn was as indispensable as Arthur Lowe or John Lemesra in the show. Any of the other front-rank characters, Fraser, Godfrey, could, in my opinion, have been written out. But Warmington-on-Sea's Home Guard without Jones's out-of-time footfall after attention just wouldn't be Dad's Army for me. Anyway, I look forward to the next episode of your excellent show and hearing yours and the other listeners' comments. Carry on chats.
Well, interesting. I mean, I think there's two things we can pick up, and we haven't spoken about this yet, but certainly Jones's ramblings. Now, I think what happened there, and this is only a pet theory, I think they wrote a couple of monologues for Clive Dunn quite early on, and they went down better than expected.
Yeah.
They then kind of decided to chuck a lot more in when the episode was underrunning.
Mm.
And there's a couple of perfect examples of that. And I haven't written any of them down, but from memory, I have a feeling one of them is in Branded. And that's right at the very opening, where Jones is leading the platoon, I believe. But yeah, I mean, that's something possibly to go and take a look at. And I have noticed when Jones goes on, I don't think it's scripted particularly. I think it's Clive Dunn going over and over things. And when you look at the script books, you can see he skirts with the script.
Yeah.
You know, he plays with it. He sticks to the spirit of it. So how long it goes on for, I think, is very much as to how much was cut.
Yes.
And how much was cut, it's probably down to how much they were underrunning, if indeed they were. That's a pet theory, I've no idea. But I don't believe they could do that with any other character. The other point I really want to make, Trevor, in response to your email, is that I too think Warbington on Sea would be a worse place without Jones. And I don't believe it would have worked as well without Jones. And that's not the reason why I put him in court, to prove that he should never have been written or to delete him from existence. I think it's just a case to say that he simply wasn't as well thought out as some of the other characters.
Funny you should mention that, James, because I think Trevor's email and your own thoughts tie in quite nicely with a couple of Dad's Army stars and a couple of friends of the podcast. I decided that I wanted to get some feedback from gentlemen who had worked with Clive Dunn and therefore Corporal Jones. So recently I caught up with the Reverend Timothy Farthing, Frank Williams and Ronnie Grange, who starred in the Dad's Army stage show, to get their thoughts on whether or not Corporal Jones is the least thought out character in Dad's Army. So let's see what the boys had to say. Okay, well, here we are, the Dad's Army podcast, and obviously we're looking at lots of different areas about Corporal Jones, and I thought it was only right that I should try and find, you know, some support from people who not only are familiar with Dad's Army, but who'd actually worked with Clive Dunn. And I'm delighted to say I'm now joined by two legends of Dad's Army. We are, of course, joined by Frank Williams, who played the Vicar, and Ronnie Grange, who starred in the Dad's Army stage show, both of whom have worked with Clive. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, and thank you very much for joining us. And so now we're actually putting Corporal Jones on trial, looking at, possibly, is he the weakest character in Dad's Army? Is he the least funny?
I would say certainly not. No, I think he's one of the best characters in Dad's Army. I mean, Arthur and John have this great sort of rapport together, but the thing they bounce off quite a lot of times is Jones and some of those interminable stories he tells, which are absolutely wonderful and never seem quite to have a point, but always have a good tagline in some sort of way. And Arthur's sort of doing all his expressions and all that all through it. So that's marvellous. I love Corporal Jones.
Ronnie, what are your thoughts on the character?
When I first started watching Dad's Army way back in 69, wasn't it, Frank, it all began?
Well, I mean, yes, I wasn't in it then, but
long before the stage show. But it was Corporal Jones that made me laugh a lot. I mean, I remember roaring with laughter at Corporal Jones. See, he was a character actor. He was pretending to be this old man. The rest of them were actually old. But Clive was only about, I don't know, late 40s when it all began. And I think when I worked with him, he was about, I don't know, 52 or 3 or something like that. And he could still do all the slapstick comedy. But, I mean, if you want to know anything about Clive himself, I can tell you what he was like to work.
Oh, yes, please, because, yeah.
Well, he drew marvellous pictures. He used to come round to our dressing rooms and draw our faces. I remember once he did mine, and I said, Clive, can I have that? He said, oh, no, certainly not. No, it's for my collection. So I wonder what happened to it. But it's a good picture of me, yeah. And, of course, I remember once in Birmingham, we were leaving the stage door, and some of us were signing autographs, and Clive, when he came out, because he didn't look anything like Corporal Jones, he didn't have all his makeup, his wig, and all that stuff, and those little glasses. So Vera's was signing autographs, and he came out, and I watched him come out of the stage door, and I looked at the people, sort of expecting them to go, oh, it's Corporal Jones, Corporal Jones. And they looked right through him. They didn't recognise him, you know. And it wasn't until I pointed out to some people that that was Corporal Jones, did they go and rush over and get his autograph.
Oh, wow.
And he was very generous as well, because I remember at the Shaftesbury Theatre in the West End on opening night, he brought round to all the supporting people in the show bottles of champagne and pork pies. Wow. And that's a fact. And we thought that was really wonderful.
He was a lovely man.
Oh, he's super. He had that marvellous party at his house, do you remember?
Oh, yes.
To which we were all invited, and it was a fabulous party.
That's right, I do now. Yeah. Do you know, I mean, I'm so old now, I'm forgetting all these things, but that's absolutely right, we did. We had a marvellous party there. And, of course, he was one of the few people, well, I don't know, few people, but he was one of the people in the cast who'd actually been born into a theatrical family.
Right.
So, I mean, he got a lot of... I first met him when I worked with his wife, Scylla. I can't even remember what we were doing. We were doing a telly. And afterwards she said, oh, my husband, Clive, is coming round to meet me afterwards. Would you like to come and have supper with us at the Players' Theatre? So I said, well, it'd be lovely, thank you. And so we went. And first time I met Clive. And, of course, he was very popular at the Players. And everybody was buying him drinks, and because they were buying him drinks, they were buying Scylla and myself drinks as well. So it was a very jolly evening, I seem to remember.
Well, it's Clive was actually at a This Is Your Life done in 1971. I think after Dad's Army started, he was the first, you know, cast member of Dad's Army to have one of those done. I mean, do you think, how famous was Clive before Dad's Army, or do you, and so what I'm asking is, if he had a This Is Your Life, is that down to the popularity of Corporal Jones, or...?
He was well known before, because he'd done... He played old men from the time he was about 20, wouldn't you think, Ronnie?
I mean, yes, that was his thing, that was his spesh.
He did
funny old men. I mean, it's really, really excellently done as well.
And, of course, he did...
Grandad, the hit record.
The hit record.
Grandad. Yes,
that,
it was a hit record.
But I was in the Army game in 59, 60, 61, and that was followed, or went at the same time, when Bootsy and Snudge came out,
yeah,
which took Alfie and Bill to... a club of some kind, and Clive was in that as a regular character, playing an old man.
Playing Corporal Jones.
Playing Corporal Jones.
Yeah.
In a different...
yeah.
And so he was very popular in that. So, yeah, he was well known.
Yeah.
And as Ronnie said, it had the hit record.
How important was Jones as a character? What did he offer that other characters couldn't? What did Clive bring to the table that perhaps, if he wasn't in it, there would be an element lost, would you say?
Well, he was so funny. I mean, he was a comedian. I mean, what he did was really hilarious. As I said, when I first started watching it, it was Clive that pleased me most of all. I just fell about laughing. I mean, all that, don't panic, all that stuff, you know. It had all these marvellous little sort of gimmicks and things. And he could do lots of slapstick, as I said earlier, because he wasn't really an old man.
Yeah.
But he didn't stick out like a sore thumb. He blended in with the real old people, like Arnold Ridley and John Murray, yeah, and people like that, who were really, really old.
Yeah.
I mean, in their 80s, you know.
I mean, I think, I still go back to what I said at the beginning, those interminable stories he tells about when he was with the Fuzzy Wuzzies, or what Lord Kitchener said, and all this. And then he's got lovely things about how there was a young lady that he sort of fell in love with, and he'd throw in little things like, she had very flat knees, because she did a lot of praying. That must have been why she did a lot of praying, so she had very flat knees.
Another thing he used to say quite regularly, which I thought was hilarious, he would say, Lord Kitchener said, don't you do that, he ejaculated.
Yes, yes.
And I think Dad's Army without Corporal Jones would be a very, very much poorer place.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think it would even exist, really. I mean, the three of them are above the title, Arthur, John and Clive,
yeah,
and
yes,
deservedly so,
yes,
I think.
And then Ian sort of became more and more famous, because his, yes, character developed, Ian Lavender, Private Pike.
Yeah. Yeah.
His character developed, and then he became a bigger and bigger star as it progressed.
Yeah.
And it's very, very good that you mentioned that, because as the series did progress, Private Pike started having more one-on-one scenes with Corporal Jones, you know, while they were either,
yeah,
out on duty together.
Yes.
There was,
yeah,
a sort of
the oldest of the platoon and the youngest, and yes. the sort of advice.
Funny you should say that, because I think he was meant to be the oldest, wasn't he?
Well, I know.
Although he was probably one of the very youngest. I mean, you and he were only in your 40s when it all kicked off. And he was meant to be the oldest and might the youngest, and it really worked very well.
I mean, I think Clive probably, apart from Ian, myself, and Jimmy Beck, may well have been the youngest member of the cast.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain he was, actually. Yeah. Whether he was younger than Arthur Lowe, I don't know, but I think he was. I'm sure.
Oh, I think he was, yeah.
But he'd been playing that part since, well, certainly since 1961, which was 8 years before Dad's Army even began, and before that, I mean. So, you know,
He probably started playing Corporal Jones when he was about 17, I
think. Yeah.
Well, Clive just celebrated his 91st birthday out in Portugal.
Yeah,
and,
fantastic.
Which is it's awesome. And I don't know, when was the last time you both saw Clive for the anniversary?
At the Imperial War Museum, wasn't it?
Was that the last time?
Yeah,
I think it probably was.
Because he made an effort to come over on that occasion.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, living in Portugal, I'm sure, is wonderful for him, but it does mean that those of us who are in England do get a bit deprived of his company for a time.
Yeah.
So it's lovely when he does come over.
So, to sum up, gents, I think it's safe to say, in the defence of Corporal Jones, that he is one of the funniest characters in Dad's Army. It would be awful if he wasn't there. Do you think Mr. Rockliffe's got it wrong when he's slagging off Corporal Jones?
Yes, he's got it wrong, because it wouldn't be Dad's Army without Clive.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could have a double act with Arthur Lowe and John Lemaitre. That would work, but it wouldn't be Dad's Army, as we know and love it.
No, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think he's absolutely essential to it. And I don't know what Mr. Rockliffe is thinking of.
Thank you both very much indeed for joining us to celebrate Corporal Jones. Thank
you,
guys.
Great pleasure, Al.
Greatest pleasure.
Well, that was incredibly underhand, having two star witnesses, Oliver, and not only that, they were defending an argument that I hadn't made. So certainly, I would actually agree very much, as I said just a moment ago, that Jones should most certainly be allowed to exist within Warmington-on-Sea. I don't think he was a mistake. But having said that, I think given all of the things that we've spoken about, and I would say, for me, the vast proportion of the physical humour that Jones has to act out, or Clive Dunn has to act out, doesn't really do it for me. I mean, that's my major point, really. I buy the other characters. Jones, this is one way I quite like to put it. Jones is a bit of a stereotype. The other characters are stereotypes that Perry and Croft created. Jones was nothing new.
I don't know if all of... I mean, the Spiv... you know, the moaning Scotsman, you know, the up himself bank manager, you know, I don't think these guys are brand new, but perhaps they're so well established now because of Dad's Army, we think of them in that role, in that mould. I suppose an old soldier like Jones, you might think of older films and think, oh yeah, there's been people like that before. Personally, I think I can't think of any, you know, I don't think Corporal Jones, I don't think you can compare him or Clive Dunn quite easily with any other comic performer or, you know, comedy character. I think in his own rights, I think he's a very unique character. And like what Ronnie was saying in the interview about, you know, General Kitchener, he ejaculated, you know, those little lines he used to throw in, which you couldn't get away with any other character, where he got his words wrong. Those little comments and jokes, I think, are pretty funny. And also interesting to hear, you know, Clive Dunn's painting and his drawing, you know, nice to hear things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, moving away a little bit from the character, and focusing more on Clive Dunn himself. But yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating insight from two people who knew him, you know? And I'm always interested in hearing people's experiences of actors within Dad's Army, irrespective of whether or not they're my favourite characters or not.
Yeah, I think you're in trouble with the Vicar. I think the Reverend Timothy Farthing was, you know, he'll be bringing up Mr. Rockliffe in his next sermon.
Well, quite possibly. And I look forward to being chastised.
Yeah. So. another friend of the show who has opinions on Corporal Jones is Richard Goulstone. Richard, I hope you're well. Thank you very much for writing in. Richard is a massive fan of Jonesy. In fact, goes to say that Jonesy is his most favourite character. So let's see what James has to think about some of Richard's comments here. Firstly, I would like to reply to something James said he didn't like about Jones in a recent podcast. He thought he acted like an 8-year-old and shouldn't get fooled by such simple things that he does in the show. But he is meant to be very old, 70. And if you know any old people with dementia, the early stages of dementia, they can be physically fit but not quite with it upstairs. So I think Jones acting in this way is highly plausible.
I've got to come in there and say no. You wanted to know what I thought. I don't think Jones was suffering from dementia in any way, shape or form. He was supposed to be an eccentric old soldier. He was not supposed to be Doolally. There was no point at where he was referred to as being ill. So,
No. So
I'm sorry, I can't accept that Jones is suffering from dementia, therefore his behaviour was erratic. Right, next point.
Lance Corporal Jones is the backbone of the entire show. If you ask someone in the street about Dad's army, what is the catchphrase they will quote? Don't panic.
We're doomed.
I'd actually say don't panic. I used to work in Sainsbury's when I was a student. And I announced I was leaving and I was going off to make my dad's army documentary. And people used to, and there was this guy used to come in and go, oh, don't panic, Mr. Mannering, you know. And it's all, the only thing he would say to me, this guy, while buying his lottery tickets, was, don't panic, Mr. Mannering. So obviously Jones was on his mind.
What did you say? You will not like it up you if you continue.
No.
If you're listening, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. Who is the bravest and most loyal member of the platoon? It's Jones.
I would contend and say who is the most stupid?
Yeah.
He's the guy who doesn't think very clearly. Bravery doesn't necessarily mean that you're sensible. I take that back. Bravery does mean that you're sensible. Jones just goes and does things that happen to be interpreted as brave.
I'd probably say Mannering was the most bravest when he's like, you know, grabbing a grenade or diving on the back of a lorry and all that kind of stuff.
That's a good call. I'll go with that.
Yeah. But I would say Jones does have moments of immense bravery, if not sheer all-out action. You know, perhaps he just thinks on the moment and thinks, okay, you know.
Sheer all-out action.
All-out action,
that's the sentence I'd use to describe Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. You know.
Clive Dunn.
Clive Dunn.
Okay.
All-out action.
I think you're going to be found guilty here. I think James might suck his defence.
I'm doing my best, James. Richard continues, who provides platoon transport? Jones. Who gives Mannering and Wilson under-the-counter meat? Jones.
But what's that got to do with strength of character? That means that he's a bit dodgy.
Well, no,
he knows his talents aren't sufficient without bribing the senior.
Richard's argument there is that Jones is the backbone of the show, so I suppose he is saying that without Jones, you'd have no sausages gags. You wouldn't have the platoon armour transport. In fairness, there's some very memorable elements of Dad's army provided through Jones. Richard continues, Clive Dunn does a great acting job of portraying Jones. Not only does he do physical and sight gags very well, which we've covered earlier on, and I agree with wholeheartedly, he can do spoken jokes and punchlines too. I never knew until years after watching the show that Clive Dunn was only in his 40s.
He
really was an old man. It's true, he performed the part incredibly well and just had one of those marvellous faces. The catchphrases make me laugh. I know that Ricky Gervais lampooned and catchphrases, and deservedly, and extras, but with Dad's army, they are like comfortable slippers. Don't panic, permission to speak, they don't like it up them. I'm smiling just typing them, which is great.
Yes.
And when Jones does the accompanying gestures, it's even funnier. Oh, absolutely, when he puts his hand on his hip and all that kind of stuff. I look at it this way, so, you know, I mean, it's sort of good fun. He is good ammunition he's great ammunition for Arthur Lowe's reacting talent.
Oh, yeah. It's good foil for Mannering.
Yeah, very much so. The constant running gag of Jones being slower than everyone else during parade drill is very funny, especially the looks he gives, thinking, why is everyone else out of step? And who doesn't love the way he answers the phone, Jack Jones a butcher, even when on duty? This is a good gag. Would you agree? You know, when you actually think about it, speaking of a colonel, you know, Jack Jones Butcher.
Yes, I think it's funny because it will surprise or confuse the person at the other end of the phone. But yeah. Overtly funny, justifiable to use on several occasions, debatable.
Yeah. Richard surmises the character of Jones provides much of a comedy of a show. He has the phrases, the physical comedy, the stories, the daft suggestions, and the mispronounced words. Who else provides this much to the show? Imagine Dad's Army without him. Impossible.
Well, no, we've been there already, and I'm not advocating that should ever have been considered, but certainly the humour, those elements of humour, could be provided by a number of the other characters, probably equally as well, I would say. I wouldn't have said that you needed Clive Dunn in order to deliver something that is genuinely funny. I mean, we're in the realms of fantasy ourselves, because clearly we'll never know what Dad's Army would have been like with Clive Dunn's lines being vocalised or articulated by the other actors. But, not completely convinced by that rather flimsy collection of called excuses, Richard.
One thing I will say, I think the character of Jones would have been much worse, and this is Realms of Fantasy, but the original casting idea of Jack Haig, I think, with no disrespect to Jack Haig, I think Clive Dunn did a much better job than Jack Haig would have done. When Jack Haig pops up in a low, it's a very sort of similar Doolally character, a bit crazy, but he ain't funny.
Even when he turns up in Dad's Army,
he's over the top.
Yeah, a little bit. I do think he's a decent actor. I'll have to say that much. And I think he also starred as Jones on the stage play.
He took over from Clive Dunn.
So, again, I never saw the stage play. I don't think you've been considered at that point.
Far from existence.
I think it's hard. I mean, had we seen that portrayal, then we'd have had something fairly concrete to compare. Seriously, Richard, thank you very much indeed for sending in your thoughts there.
Absolutely. And he said, take James's name and put it on a fizzer.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Okay. What precisely is a fizzer? Is it a charge sheet of some kind, or is I've got a large saucepan? Yeah. In my mind, which I don't think it is. Anyway,
I'm sure Richard will write in and tell us.
Yes, no, we know what a fizzer is. Anyway, thank you very much indeed to both Trevor and Richard. You clearly spent quite a bit of time providing some of your thoughts about Jack Jones there, and I certainly be interested, given our conversation, Oliver, what the remainder of our listeners think. So we're not going to re-examine Clive Dunn's portrayal of Jack Jones in a future podcast in any great depth, but we'll certainly read out some feedback should you have any strong opinions on what we've said.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, James, but I think the jury have pretty much decided that you're wrong.
I would contend that the arguments received from those called and given evidence was circumstantial and flimsy at best, easily arguable, certainly debatable. Whether or not we can be conclusive about Jones's guilt or innocence, I think we'll have to leave for another day. One thing we can agree on, without a shadow of a doubt, and that's Warmington-on-Sea would be a far less colourful place, and Dad's Army as a product wouldn't be as gratifying, I believe, without Dance Corporal Jones.
And another thing we can agree on is that the Dad's Army podcast will be back with episode 60, which is going to be a commentary episode. We're not going to tell you which one yet, because it's a surprise.
To us as well.
And it's been a pleasure to get back behind the mic and to chat about Lance Corporal Jones. We hope it's been worth the wait. We hope you've enjoyed it. And please do send in your feedback, your thoughts about us, jury and executioner here, and what you thought of my dismal impression of Corporal Jones at the beginning of the show. Send them in, as usual, to james@dadsarmypodcast.com or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/OliverCrocker. Mr. Rockcliffe, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed giving Corporal Jones a reasonable hearing. I think we've had very justifiable arguments and points made on both sides, and I think we will probably have to do something perhaps not as formal for the other characters, because it's the first time we've sat down and actually thought of examples of particular scenes, snippets of dialogue, and considered how these characters actually came into being. And I have to say, I've enjoyed it. And I think if I've enjoyed it for my least favourite character, then it can only be a better experience for the others. So, yeah, hopefully we'll take you with us with that, listeners. You'll enjoy it. And if that is the case, then feel free to send in your suggestions which character we should take a look at next to the email addresses that Oliver so diligently read out slightly earlier. And in the meantime, we'll wish you all the best, and we shall catch up with you in about a month's time.
And remember, don't panic!
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Don't panic! Don't panic! Don't panic! Don't look at them!